The Illusion of Choice, A Life Lived on Autopilot, Chapter 5, Confronting the Enemy, What You Don't Know Can Indeed Hurt You. I don't know about Scott, but as far as I was concerned, over the next few days after our discovery, everything felt different. We weren't just working on robotics anymore. We were part of something bigger. And then, management showed up. There is the sound of faint mechanical whirring in the background and the soft tapping of keyboards also filling the room.
Scott, Alejandra, I see you're both hard at work.
It was a corporate representative, smooth and professional, and dressed in his typically tight-fitting suit. Alejandra, suspicious, asked, "Well, what's this about? We weren't expecting anyone." And the representative, smiling, says,
"Oh, it's nothing serious, just checking in, making sure everything's running smoothly. You've both been doing some excellent work here, very promising, and, well, basically, as the corporate sponsor, I want to make sure that things continue to be very promising. We have a stake in this, of course."
And Scott, in a flat voice, says, "You mean you're making sure that we're still following the program?" And the corporate representative chuckles.
"Well, exactly. We wouldn't want anyone stepping out of line now, would we?"
When I first saw him, like Scott, I had expected just a faceless suit, another cog in the machine. But what stood before Scott and I was something else entirely. He was tall, but not intimidating in the way of stature. No, it was actually the coldness in his eyes, a void where human emotion should have been, that was most unnerving. His black hair slicked back gave him a predator's appearance, his pale skin drawn tight over sharp cheekbones. His eyes, God, his eyes were what unnerved me the most. They were dark, so dark, they seemed almost hollow, like looking into a pit with no bottom. His lips curled into a smile that never reached those eyes, and he just didn't wear his tailored suit like a uniform. He wore it like a second skin, as though he was hiding the real creature beneath. His face had no warmth, no empathy, and there were sharp angles of his jawline. The tightness around his mouth, it was as if he was designed to intimidate without needing to speak.
He looked like a man who had sold more than just his soul to the corporate machine. I shared in the reaction that Alejandra had. No, he wasn't just a man. He looked like he had become the machine, cold and calculating, void of any humanity. There was no mere sponsor here. This was a figure who embodied the shadows of the world we now were facing, and it was like staring at a human mask worn by something far darker, far more insidious. And Alejandra says, "We didn't expect to be out of line at all. We just want to do our jobs." And the corporate rep smiled.
"Doing your jobs, that is a good thing. I like that. And hopefully, you'll continue to follow that program."
Later in the day, Alejandra meets with Stacy. They sit across from one another, glasses clinking in a cozy cafe. There's light chatter in the background and soft music plays. I couldn't shake the feeling. Ever since the visit from management, something had changed. They knew we were onto something. And that's what scared me the most, more than I wanted to admit. That first visit ended in surveillance where we had to defend ourselves and try to literally blind the people tailing us. I needed to talk to someone outside of it all. There was a sound of Alejandra sighing as she stirs her coffee absentmindedly. And Stacy says, curious,
You've been quiet since we got here, Al. What's going on? Work is getting to you again?
And Alejandra says, hesitant, well, you could say that. It's just something strange is happening, Stace. Scott and I, we've been noticing things that don't make sense. People acting off, almost robotic, and then there's this video we both received, something about what's going on in the future where it's creepy, unsettling. It's a warning of sorts. Stacy raises an eyebrow. A video? What kind of video? And Alejandra lowers her voice. It was like a glimpse into the future, or maybe even the present, but twisted. People moving like they were part of some program, like they're not even real. And then, earlier today, management came to check on us, right out of the blue. It's the second time. The whole thing feels off. Stacy leans forward, her expression softening, as she tries to make sense of Alejandra's words. So you think you're being monitored or something, don't you? Well, maybe it's just stress. You and Scott have been working crazy hours and having these metaphysical concerns about free will and predestination. When's the last time either of you took a break? And Alejandra says, frustrated, it's not like that. It's like something far worse than just being tired or stressed out or burnt out. We're part of something big, Stacy, and it's scary. Like we're contributing to something that's controlling people, turning them into these NPCs, these non-playable characters, just like in video games. Stacy remains silent, quiet, letting Alejandra's words settle. She finally says calmly, well, maybe you're overthinking things. I mean, you're in robotics, right? AI and stuff. It's normal to start seeing patterns, especially when you've been staring at code all day, but the world's still real, Al. You can't lose sight of that. We're real. We're having a conversation and drinking real coffee in a real cafe. And Alejandra says softly, but what if it isn't? What if everything we think is real is just part of the program, like our decision to meet for coffee or to order coffee here? Stacy raises an eyebrow in response and then takes a sip of her brew. Look, I get it. I can imagine just how overwhelming things can feel when you're working with all this futuristic tech, but maybe you just need to step back and breathe. Not everything's as sinister as it seems, and if it is, well, you're smart, you can figure it out. Alejandra stares into her cup, her mind racing with the weight of the conversation. Stacy was trying to help, I know that, but I couldn't shake the feeling that this was bigger than us, bigger than anything we ever could have imagined. After coffee with Stacy, Alejandra heads over to Scott's apartment. There is the soft clicking of a keyboard and soft humming of electronics in the background. Alejandra and I were stuck. Together, we were trying to search the net, look for any information about people who might be experiencing the same thing or possibly receive this video. We couldn't find the video anywhere. Nowhere on social media, nowhere on any of the sites. So we felt further away from the truth than ever. And the walls felt like they were closing in. We wanted to talk with someone who really shared in our knowledge background and also was open to new and revolutionary ideas. But who would that person be? There was only one that we kept coming back to. Scott levels his gaze on his friend. Alejandra, do you really think that this Quantum Quinn is the guy that we should talk to? I mean, the dude's a TV personality. Sure, he's smart, but who knows what strings are pulling him behind the scenes? And Alejandra says firm and decisive, he's more than just a TV personality, Scott. He's a wild card. The guy has a reputation for not following the rules. He broke some big scandals over the years. He questions everything, and he tells his viewers not to trust anyone at face value. And his sponsors, they're not the usual corporate types. He gets these way-out companies that believe in conspiracy theories, so he really doesn't have to answer to anyone. Alejandra pauses and then adds, and we really don't have a list of trustworthy people to turn to right now.
What I said to Scott was absolutely true.
Ever since the glitches started with Scott and I, ever since Scott and I realized we were being watched and, well, our circle of trust had shrunk. Everyone seemed compromised, part of the system. But this Quantum Quinn had always been the guy who said, "Don't trust authority," even when the cameras were rolling. Scott asked her skeptically, "So what's your plan? That we send him an email?" Alejandra laughs. "Actually, he's old school. Invites people to send letters, claims it keeps things more authentic, less traceable." There's a sound of paper crinkling as she picks up a notepad. "I've already started to draft something." I felt strange, writing a letter in a world where everything else ran on ones and zeros, but, well, it was Quantum Quinn after all, and Quinn was the exception to a lot of rules. But I trusted Allie, and right now we needed someone to question the very foundation of what we thought we knew. The scene shifts to a coffee shop just a few days later. There is the ambient sound of the coffee cups clattering in the background, low murmurs of conversation. Alejandra, Scott, seated at a table with an unusual-looking individual. I didn't know what to expect when Quantum Quinn received our letter and immediately agreed to meet with us. He wasn't exactly known for his accessibility, but when the letter was sent, something must have clicked.
"I get a lot of crazy fan mail letters, you know? I mean, really nutty stuff, nuttier than me," Quantum Quinn says. "And your letter, though, it had a lot of good stuff in it, and it made a lot of sense. The flash drive of the video that you sent with me, that caught my attention. You've been busy, or this is the greatest hoax that's ever been perpetrated."
And Scott says, puzzled, "We didn't think we'd even hear back from you. I mean, we know you're busy." Quantum Quinn, in his mid-40s, is a well-known television personality, known in the fields of artificial intelligence, quantum physics, and computer science. He's a tall, lean man, standing at about 6'2", with a wiry frame that seems to carry an almost restless energy. His dark, tousled hair has streaks of gray running through it, and he has sharp, intelligent green eyes that seem to flicker with curiosity and mischief. He's known for his eccentric but professional style, often seen wearing a mix of tailored suits, paired with odd, colorful accessories like mismatched socks, vibrant ties with strange patterns, or even a quirky pocket square. Quinn's look is polished, yet at the same time his eccentricities show his different way of life. He chuckles softly.
"Well, busy's an understatement, but when I read what you wrote, I got curious, very curious."
He leans forward, lowering his voice.
"You're starting to pull at threads most people wouldn't touch, Scott. You're not wrong, and that's dangerous."
And Alejandra cuts in,
"Dangerous? How?"
And Quantum Quinn, leaning back, voice casual, says,
"Dangerous in the sense that knowledge can be a slippery slope. It's like putting your hand on a hot stove just to see what happens. You might not like the result."
He pauses, watching their reactions before smiling faintly.
"But hey, I'm intrigued. There's something unnatural about what you're dealing with, and I would like to know about it."
And Scott says urgently, "So you believe this too, that we're part of some larger system and that everything's predetermined?" And Quantum Quinn says slowly,
"Well, let's just say, I'm not ruling it out, but I think you need proof, real proof."
His fingers tap the table, "which is why I'm going to invite you to my lab. There's something I want to show you, something that might change your perspective." And Alejandra, frowning, says, "Well, what are you going to show us?" And Quantum Quinn smiles enigmatically,
"Well, you'll see soon enough, but let's just say it involves some experiments of my own, ones that look a lot like what you've been working with on your AI models, only, well, the stakes are a lot higher. Be at my lab tomorrow, 9 a.m. sharp. Here's the address." He hands them a piece of paper. "And come prepared, because what you're going to see is going to change everything."
Quantum Quinn walks off, leaving Scott and Alejandra sitting in silence for a moment, processing what just happened.
And Alejandra says quietly,
"You think he's the real deal?"
And Scott says, staring at the empty seat he left behind, "Well, I don't know, but I think we're about to find out." A second visit from corporate management in a very short amount of time left both Alejandra and I with more questions than answers, their shadows lingering. But then came Quinn's reply, quick, almost too quick. And when he said, "I've got an experiment that'll blow your mind," we knew this was just the beginning. But we had no choice but to see it through.